of martyr Safiya Deen was covered momentarily by the Palestinian flag before reappearing as a picture of Palestinian martyrs Yahya Sinwar and Ismail Haniyeh, proving once again that the axis of resistance is bound by their love for Palestine.
Saeed Hassan Nasrallah!
Saeed Hassan Nasrallah!
Was not only a great leader!
Was not only a great leader!
Phenomenal human being!
Phenomenal human being!
Military general!
Military general!
And martyr!
And martyr!
But also an enigma!
But also an enigma!
Whose humility...
Whose humility,
altruism,
and truth
have become the guiding light. Of the resistance in Lebanon,
Yemen,
Iraq, Palestine,
and beyond.
Sayyid Nasrallah and Sayyid Safiya Deen gave Palestine their all. From the beginning of their struggle in liberating the occupied lands until the day of their martyrdom, Israel thought that by burying the body of Sayyid Nasrallah under 83 tons of explosives, that it ended the resistance. But what it did not know was that it actually buried the seeds of resistance that will keep growing. Rachel Hamdouin, New York.
Now to Gaza, where Hamas warns that it will not enter new negotiations unless Israel completely adheres to the ceasefire agreement and releases the seventh batch of Palestinian prisoners. Abdul Latif al-Bonu, a spokesman for Hamas, said that Israel's failure to implement the first phase of the ceasefire is blocking the release of the remaining Israeli captives. He noted that the failure to implement the humanitarian protocol and the delays in releasing Palestinian prisoners indicate Israel's intention to disrupt the agreement. He said that Hamas is in contact with the mediators about these violations. Now, the comments came after Israel failed to release 620 Palestinian prisoners as scheduled. Hamas had previously released the six Israeli captives in accordance with the agreement. Israel has also blocked the temporary shelters and heavy machinery from entering Gaza and continues its military operations, resulting in civilian casualties. Over the past day, 10 more Palestinian bodies were recovered, raising the total death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide to nearly 48,350 people. Meanwhile, our Gaza correspondent, Moti Abu Musabeh, joined us earlier with the latest details on Israel's ceasefire violations across the besieged territory. Let's take a listen.
Over the past couple of hours, several Israeli tanks and bulldozers pushed ahead towards Al-Fukhari area in the eastern part of Khan Yunis, Syria, amid heavy gunfire towards the Palestinian people who returned to their destroyed residential areas there. And as you know, this is not the first time for the Israeli occupation forces to target the Palestinian people there. Even when it comes to Rafah City, the Israeli tanks mobilized at Philadelphia Corridor in the southern part of Rafah City continue to shoot at the Palestinian people there, particularly in the people who are still attempting to return to the central area of Rafah City, particularly in the vicinity of the Al-Auda roundabout. Several Palestinian civilians were confirmed and reported injured by the Israeli forces as a result of the indiscriminate gunfire targeting the Palestinian people. As you know, since the very beginning of the implementation ceasefire agreement on the ground here, the Israeli violations have never stopped for a while, particularly in Rafah City. According to the mayor of Rafah City, more than 33 Palestinian civilians were killed since the onset of the ceasefire agreement in Rafah City. We are talking about thousands of the Palestinian people who are still unable to move or reach their residential areas, albeit they are completely destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces. Those, these are considered like, as you know, flagrant violations of the ceasefire agreement on the ground. Needless to mention that the Israeli occupation forces are also in different parts of Gaza continue to shoot at the Palestinian people. A short while ago, here in Gaza City, the Israeli tanks opened the gunfire towards the Palestinian people in the eastern part of Az-Zaytun.
The Israeli occupation forces continue their incursions into the northern occupied West Bank as Palestinian groups put up a stiff resistance to the invading regime forces. The armed wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad has said that its fighters clashed with Israeli troops in Jenin that resulted in the injuries of regime troops. Israel has deployed tanks and other heavy military vehicles in northern West Bank. Now, regime forces also raided homes in some areas and abducted several Palestinians. According to media reports, Israel is intending to create large corridors in Torkaram and Jenin in order to allow free movement for its forces and heavy equipment. It has been several weeks since Tel Aviv launched a large-scale military operation dubbed Iron Wall. Israeli forces have killed dozens of Palestinians and destroyed large swaths of land in the north. Naga Hamid has earlier joined us from Ramallah and given us more details on the latest Israeli aggression in occupied West Bank.
This is the first time that the Palestinian in Jenin since 2002, which marked the end of the large Israeli aggression upon the West Bank, which was called the Protecting Wall. And since it has finished in 2002, Palestinians over here have not seen military tanks in the West Bank. But yesterday, the military tanks have indeed came into Jenin, and they have settled in the area and the surrounding of the Jenin refugee camp. Immediately, the IRF started intensifying their raids, destroying even more infrastructure that is already severely destroyed, destroying entire roads in the area of Qabatia, as Qabatia has been under a full ban of movement since late Friday. We are talking about almost 3 days under a movement ban. And according to local resources, we are waiting that this ban will end in the hours of the noon, but no official statement about this. But the destruction in Qabatia was actually unimaginable.
The United Nations chief says he is gravely concerned about the rising violence by Israeli settlers against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Antonio Guterres also slammed calls for annexation of Palestinian territory, including the Gaza Strip, as Israel expands its military operations in the West Bank. Guterres told the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva that a precarious ceasefire is holding in Gaza and the resumption of hostilities must be avoided at all costs. He also called for the establishment of an independent Palestinian state with Gaza as an integral part. Meanwhile, a fresh pro-Palestine protest has taken place in the Spanish capital. Protesters gathered to demand an end to the Israeli atrocities, calling for justice for the Palestinian people. They also condemned the West for its silence and inaction on Israeli crimes. Alberto Garcia brings us more from Madrid.
The BDS movement in Spain, along with the Solidarity Network Against the Occupation of Palestine, has called for a large demonstration in Madrid under the slogan, Stop the Genocide in Palestine, Palestine is not for sale. The protest condemns Israel's impunity in committing genocide, ethnic cleansing, and territorial expansion, while criticizing the West's hypocritical silence and inaction which enabled these crimes. The demonstration began in front of the U.S. Embassy, a symbolic center of imperialist support for Israel's settler colonial project. Protesters staged a loud pot-banging protest, voicing their opposition to Washington's unwavering military, financial, and political backing of the Zionist regime.
Supporting these mobilizations is a moral imperative. Standing with Palestinians after decades of oppression is urgent. Meanwhile, our authorities secretly sustain the arms trade with a regime accused of genocide, making them complicit in these crimes. Silence is not neutrality, it's complicity.
The Palestinian cause is a fight for humanity. Those who don't defend it are misled by distorted media. For nearly 80 years, Israel has falsely claimed victimhood while committing some of the worst crimes since the World War II.
The march moved to the European Commission in Madrid, where activists condemned the EU's hypocrisy, claiming to defend human rights while funding and arming Israel's occupation. The mobilization denounces Israel's ethnic cleansing in Gaza and demands an end to arms trade, military cooperation, and ties with the Zionist entity. With the call to stop the genocide in Palestine and arms trade and ties with Israel, people in Madrid once again take to the streets to demand an immediate halt to military and diplomatic cooperation with Israel, exposing the complicity of Western powers in the ongoing ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. Alberto Garcia, Madrid.
Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi calls for accountability from those who possess nuclear weapons, including the U.S. and Israel. Araghchi issued the call at a United Nations disarmament conference in the Swiss city of Geneva. He added that the use or even the threat of using nuclear weapons must remain taboo. Araghchi criticized the lack of any inspection over Washington's nuclear activities. He condemned Israel's arsenal of weapons of mass destruction, labeling them a significant threat to both regional and global peace. Now, the top Iranian diplomat noted that Israel has repeatedly threatened different countries over the past decades and have attacked a number of nations. Also in Geneva, the Iranian foreign minister has met with the UN Secretary General and a number of officials from other countries on the sidelines of the disarmament conference. In a meeting between Abbas Araghchi and Antonio Guterres, the two sides emphasized closer cooperation among the different countries in the face of threats against peace and stability. In a separate meeting with his Bahraini counterpart, Abdul Latif bin Rashid Al Zayani, Araghchi urged Manama and all Arab and Islamic states to firmly stand against the forced displacement of the Palestinians from Gaza. The top Iranian diplomat also discussed a range of issues with the Armenian Foreign Minister Ararat Mirzoyan. The issues included regional cooperation in order to safeguard the stability and sovereignty of regional countries. The Iranian Foreign Minister also met with his Indonesian counterpart, Sugiono. The European Union has announced a broad range of new sanctions against Russia on the third anniversary of the Ukraine conflict, even as differences grow between the U.S. and EU on Kyiv.
We are discussing and hopefully can pass the 16th package of sanctions, which includes gaming consoles to Shadow Fleet, the different aspects. And then we have also put forward a new defense initiative to support Ukraine with ammunition capabilities in the short term, what they need. So I also expect...
The top EU diplomat added that the new round of sanctions is aimed at curbing Russia's war efforts. Russian banks, media outlets, and oil sector are among the targets of these restrictions. She also rejected the recent statements by U.S. President Donald Trump, who called the Ukrainian president a dictator. Kanja insisted that the U.S. cannot seal any peace deal with the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, without Ukraine or Europe being involved. The differences between the U.S. and the EU's stance on Ukraine has grown wider in recent months following a high delegation meeting between U.S. and Russia on mending ties and ending the war in Ukraine. Neither the EU nor Ukraine were invited to the talks. And now turning to Iran, where the army continues its large-scale joint drills along the southern Makran shores, the Sea of Oman, and the northern Indian Ocean on day three of the joint Zulfaqar 1403 military exercises. The army's Yak-130 fighter jet made its operational debut and a joint air mission. Well, the warplane, alongside MiG-29s, intercepted and destroyed a target drone, showcasing its advanced capabilities. The drill spokesman, Brigadier General Ali Reza Sheikh, described the jet's participation a milestone in modernizing the Air Force. He highlighted the drill's role in strengthening the coordination and combat readiness of Army forces. The drills kicked off on Saturday. A day before its start, the Iranian army warns that any threat against the country will be met with a severe response. And with that, brings us to the end of this Worldless edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
the limelight.
The Zionist regime's genocidal aggression in Gaza has resulted in the killing of some 150 academics, 760 teachers, more than 12,000 students, and the complete or partial destruction of 494 schools and higher education institutes. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Salma al-Hindi, 21, is facing an uncertain future. A math undergraduate, Salma saw her university Al-Azhar destroyed in November 2023 when the Zionist regime military bombed the campus. Since then, and displaced with her family from their home in the Al-Nasr neighborhood of Gaza City to a tent inside the grounds of Al-Nasr Pediatric Hospital, Al-Hindi has struggled. She asked in January when talking to the Electronic Intifada, how am I supposed to study? For the past 15 months, my family and I have been living in a tent without electricity, internet, or a computer. To make matters worse, Al-Hindi said her course textbooks were lost forever when her family's house was bombed in October 2023. She's far from alone. The Zionist regime airstrikes and shelling, along with controlled demolitions, have completely or partially destroyed every single one of Gaza's 12 higher education institutes. According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, 88,000 university students have been unable to pursue their studies, and at least 555 students from Gaza have had to forego on the opportunity to use scholarships they had been offered abroad. Al-Hindi told the Electronic Intifada, I don't know what to do. I'm worried about my future, which is slipping away before my eyes. The Israeli war on Gaza has destroyed the future of thousands of university students. The occupation has destroyed everything in Gaza. The situation hasn't changed after the declaration of a ceasefire and the supposed suspension of the Zionist regime's attacks. She said she's still busy helping provide for her family's daily needs, such as finding water and collecting firewood to cook food and to heat their tent. Despite the difficulties, Al-Hindi said she was not giving up and will find a way to complete her studies. She hoped foreign governments, aid agencies, and universities would step in to support education in Gaza by any means possible. As far back as April, a panel of United Nations experts suggested Israel's systematic destruction of education institutions could be considered an intentional effort to comprehensively destroy the Palestinian education system in Gaza. Taysir Al-Saif, 23, was on the verge of graduating with a degree in information technology from University of Palestine, destroyed in January last year, when she and four of her family members were displaced to the Deir al-Balah camp in Az-Zaytun neighborhood in eastern Gaza City on November 8, 2023. Asaf said in January about quitting the program after a month, I joined the e-learning system at the university, but I couldn't continue due to the lack of internet, the power outages, and the general insecurity. She recalled walking some 3 miles every day to reach a cafe with a strong enough internet connection for her to download the materials and study summaries provided online by her professors. But these efforts also proved unsustainable, as it cost her $3 an hour to use the internet. Asaf said, we were supposed to be taking our final exams for the first semester these days. Everything has been postponed, but until when? No one knows. She said she hoped the ceasefire could provide her and other students with opportunities to resume their education, even despite the wholesale destruction of universities. It will be a gradual process. The first realistic option would be to continue studying via online educational programs, while educational institutions are rebuilt to allow students to gradually return. Temporary or alternative educational centers could also be constructed in Gaza. Asaf said she still considers herself lucky. Many of her fellow students were killed over the 15 months, and even after the ceasefire came into, Israeli regime attacks have continued and are a source of anxiety for everyone in Gaza. She asked, how can a student study when they know they are at risk of being killed at any moment, with the constant threat of a missile possibly hitting their home or tent, or the homes and tents of their neighbors? Nasser Gayounin, 29, was enrolled in a master's math program at the Islamic University of Gaza, which the Zionist regime military deliberately targeted in October 2023, destroying most of its buildings. He said, I was supposed to graduate in the spring of 2024, but then my future was turned upside down, and my dreams changed from being an educated person to working in a cafe to provide for my family's basic needs. He described 2024 as a lost year. He said, I lost my textbooks, I lost friends, I lost professors, and I don't know what will happen to us this year. Everything has evaporated. Ceasefire or not, the destruction in Gaza has been devastating. Reconstruction will be a massive task, and he feared it would be years before education could be properly restarted. He said, the university can no longer be used for studying. Everything is destroyed. Classrooms, labs, all its facilities. Returning while things are in this condition is extremely difficult, and Gaza may need years to restore its education sector. Salah Abdul Ati, chairman of the International Commission to Support Palestinian Rights Group, accused the Zionist regime of trying to obliterate education in Gaza by specifically targeting higher education institutes. He said, targeting universities, schools, and academies is a violation of international humanitarian law and infringes on the right to education. Moreover, he added, the deliberate targeting of universities is unlawful, as per Article 8 of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, which classifies deliberate attacks on civilian objects as war crimes and violations of the Hague and Geneva Conventions. With such clear breaches of international law, Abdulati said Israel must be held accountable, and individuals who issued, executed, or participated in such attacks should be prosecuted before the ICC. The Zionist regime's genocidal aggression has resulted in the killing of some 150 academics, 760 teachers, more than 12,000 students, and the complete or partial destruction of 494 schools and higher education institutes. Ala Bani Fadel, a professor of criminal law and human rights at Al Najah National University, said on January 8, by targeting universities in the Gaza Strip, the occupation deliberately contributed to the destruction of the academic environment, which has long been a significant source of motivation and innovation. The complete halt in the educational process has deprived the students of their right to education in both the present and future, as well as denying faculty members their right to work. In such a situation, distance learning becomes the only method for continuing coursework, he said. But like many other educators, Bani Fadel reported experiencing firsthand problems caused by inconsistent internet access, weak telecommunications, and frequent power outages. He said, Gaza's universities will need a significant amount of time to restore their activities following the massive destruction they have endured. He said it was essential to encourage students to immediately enroll in Arab and international universities to complete their education. Academics must raise their voices and share their struggles with the world by communicating with human rights and academic organizations to highlight the devastating reality of the education sector in Gaza.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful Hello everyone, brothers and sisters I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program The Ocean of Dua During this month of Sha'ban The month of Almighty Allah's mercy and pleasure, we will try to offer a glance into some of the passages of the whispered prayer of Sha'baniyah or the so-called Munajat Sha'baniyah. Thank you in advance for staying with us. We'll be back again after listening to some parts of it.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad ilahi لم يكن لي حول فأنتقل به عن معصيتك إلا في وقت أيقظتني لمحبتك وكما أردت أن أكون كنت فشكرتك بإدخالي في كرمك ولتطهير قلبي من أوساخ الغفلة عنك
As you were with us previously, dear listeners, we were discussing this excerpt of the whispered prayer of Sha'baniyah. إلهي لم يكن لي حول فانتقل به عن معصيتك الا في وقت ايقظتني لمحبتك My Lord, I had no strength to desist from your disobedience except when you awakened me because of your love. The Almighty Allah does many things because of his love. He loves the servant and he wants to see the love of the servants in return. Now, in the beginning it is that loving the servant causes him to awaken them. Now, regarding this excerpt, beautiful excerpt of the whispered prayer of Sha'baniyah, we have discussed the concept of mahabba and love of the Almighty Allah. And now we are discussing the concept of disobedience and how it somehow causes the obscurity of the heart. In the previous episode, we reached one question. What is the reason of this disconnection and obscurity of the heart by committing sins? The Islamic narrations assert that one of the most significant factors that lead to the obscurity of the heart and its alienation from the Almighty Allah are two things. Disregard for the signs of the Almighty Allah and committing sins. This committing sins is what we are going to discuss. Because in this part we read, إِلَهِ لَمْ يَكُنْ لِي حَوْلٌ فَأَنْتَقِلَ بِهِ عَنْ مَعْصِيَتِكَ My Lord, I had no strength to control myself, to avoid committing sins, except when you awaken me because of your love. Now, regarding this factor, committing sins, Allah the Exalted says in the Holy Quran, "No, indeed, rather their hearts have been sullied by what they have been earning." This verse clearly implies that the sins committed by a person evolve to become a rust and dirt on the heart. They somehow seal the heart and cut it off from the Almighty Allah. We will elaborate more after a short.
We have been given the blessed opportunity of witnessing another month of Sha'ban, which is the month of Allah's mercy and pleasure. حَفَفْتَهُ بِالرَّحْمَةِ وَالرَّضْوَانِ. Allah has covered this month with His pleasure and mercy. I thought it might be good to have a little introduction to Munajat Sha'baniyya. The late Imam Khomeini in many places on several occasions emphasized on this Munajat, and in one of his sayings he said that there are many important mystical points that one can understand from the Quran and whispered prayers of Imams. And then in particular, he mentioned Munajat Sha'baniyya, and he said philosophers, mystics may be able to understand some aspects of these whispered prayers. But if someone wants to really understand, must be a person who has himself achieved a high level of closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so that he can have a taste, he can have an experience of what he says. In another place, the late Imam Khomeini said something very important. He said, this Munajat Sha'baniyya is one of the whispered prayers that if someone pays attention to it and follows it and reflects on it, he can reach somewhere. He can achieve some levels of perfection. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us in this month of forgiveness and to be pleased with us in this month of pleasure. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bless us, our families, our community, all humanity with His pleasure, with His reward, with the coming of Imam Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, with forgiveness, with being able to remain always on the right path.
Now, dear listeners, the point is that committing sins disconnect man from the Almighty Allah. But how do they do this? Man commits sin until his heart is cut off from the Almighty Allah. And if the heart is disconnected from Allah, it gets inverted. It somehow becomes upside down. It loses all its operative features. It cannot function as it used to do. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, in this regard, says, nothing is more destroying for the heart than the sin it commits. The heart indeed engages in a battle with the sin, and the sin continues to remain in it until it overpowers the heart. Hence, it becomes turned upside down. He subhanahu wa ta'ala is also reported to have said, when a person commits a sin, a black spot appears in his heart. If he repents of it, it disappears. But if he persists in committing the sin, the spot becomes bigger until it overpowers his heart. And if this happens, then he would never become victorious after this. So, dear listeners, this is how sins invert the heart. as you may remember, we said that soul and heart has two important aspects, has two different functions. It has to receive, the light and guidance that from the Almighty Allah. And then based on this kind of receiving, it is that the heart is able to disseminate the kind of light and guidance. This is how the heart is able to manipulate the movements, the stance, the relations, the interactions, the speech, and all the actions and concerns of a person. Now, if the heart becomes like a stone when it cannot receive anything, you cannot expect him to give out and disseminate anything. This is when the sins are said to invert the heart. Man commits sins until he is cut off from the Almighty Allah, and if the heart is disconnected, it gets inverted. Now, Imam has beautifully put these concepts into this word, these words. إِلَهِ لَمْ يَكُنْ لِي حَوْلٌ فَأَنْتَقِلَ بِهِ عَنْ مَعْصِيَتِكَ. I know, I believe, I have understood this fact by my heart, that I cannot control myself from your disobedience, except by your love, except by your help, except by your love that you awaken me, that you inform me of the destroying features of committing sins. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان والعالم يقول لك احبك يا شعبان شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان
We are with you. How about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
In the limelight.
For the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah's martyred leader Seyyed Hassan Nasrallah, Palestine was not a regional conflict, but rather the soul of humanity's struggle. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Hezbollah's martyred leader Seyyed Hassan Nasrallah was laid to rest on Sunday, 23rd of February, in the presence of millions of his admirers who have flocked to Beirut to attend his historic funeral. While he's not physically around anymore, his death does not mean the end of his mission. His martyrdom on 28th of September last year marked an eruption of a volcanic force that will reshape history and inspire future generations of resistance fighters and justice seekers. His pure blood, like that of all martyrs of the resistance front, will fuel the unquenchable fire of justice, the struggle against oppression, and the unyielding march towards freedom of Palestine. His burial ceremony transcended grief. It was a global phenomenon of defiance, echoing from Lebanon's valleys to Gaza's rubble-strewn streets, from Yemen's rugged mountains to every corner where the oppressed rise against Western imperialism and Zionism. The martyred leader of the Islamic resistance movement in Lebanon stood unshaken, while others in the Arab world faltered. He forged not merely an organization, but a movement whose legacy will grow bigger and brighter. His ideology rejected colonial humiliation, declaring sovereignty non-negotiable and dignity inviolable. He was not a politician, but an institution that reshaped the equations of power in West Asia region and strengthened the resistance front against the Zionist regime. His strength was not inherited. It was formed in the crucible of wars, seizures, assassinations, and relentless psychological warfare against the resistance front. Hezbollah, born under the shadow of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, led by the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, became a force to be reckoned with under his leadership. It became a parallel society, a fortress of dignity, shielding the oppressed, defying occupiers, and rewriting the rules of resistance. We continue with Press TV's coverage of this story. Said Hassan Nasrallah's speeches were not mere addresses, but powerful salvos aimed at the enemy. In his iconic spider's web speech, he dismantled the myth of Israeli invincibility with a single phrase, "Israel is weaker than a spider's web." These words shattered decades of Zionist propaganda, exposing the fragility of their so-called military might. Distilling Hezbollah's creed into three immutable principles, dignity, resistance, and defiance, he declared, "We are a people who will not be humiliated." Said Hassan Nasrallah's leadership was inseparable from Imam Khomeini's revolutionary theology, a doctrine where faith is action, martyrdom is victory, and resistance is divine. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, sharpened this vision, declaring, "The path to Al-Quds is paved with resistance." Together, they transformed faith into a blueprint for revolution, merging spirituality with resistance. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah's unbreakable bond with Haj Qasem Soleimani, Iran's anti-terrorism commander, epitomized this creed. Their alliance was no diplomatic formality, but a blood oath, forged in the heat of battle for Palestine's liberation. Said Hassan Nasrallah urged his followers in his final remarks, he said, "Follow Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. It was a sacred pledge to preserve and protect the revolution led by Ayatollah Khamenei." Ayatollah Khamenei's heartfelt eulogy for Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, calling him "my brother and my pride," was also no political gesture. It was a covenant, a vow that the axis of resistance would bend to no empire and to no threat and no compromise. It was a beautiful tribute to what the martyred Hezbollah leader did for the resistance front for decades. He walked the path of Karbala, where Imam Hussein's stance against tyranny left a legacy. Said Hassan Nasrallah said, "Imam Hussein stood alone, but his cry shook empires. Martyrdom is not death, it is immortality." This philosophy materialized in 2000 when Hezbollah expelled Israeli occupation forces from southern Lebanon, marking the Arab world's first military victory over the Israeli regime. In 2006, during Israel's 33-day war, Hezbollah's resilience stunned the world, said Hassan Nasrallah turned martyrdom into a weapon, vowing, "Every drop of blood writes Zionism's obituary." Website of Iran's English language newspaper Kayhan has also covered this story and tells us more. For Hezbollah's martyred leader, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, Palestine was not a regional conflict, but rather it was the soul of humanity's struggle. Sayed Hassan Nasrallah proclaimed, "We fight not for the land, but for justice." Under Ayatollah Khamenei's guidance, Hezbollah's arms, intelligence networks, and alliances became lifelines for Palestine resistance. As Sayed Hassan Nasrallah said, "To abandon Palestine is to surrender the future." Nasrallah was no ordinary leader. He was a master strategist who could outsmart and outpower the enemy despite limited resources. He outmaneuvered empires with his sharp wit and wisdom, exposing Zionism's fatal flaw, arrogance. He once said, "They study our weapons, but they fear our will." He warned, "Political Islam withers when it trades dignity for power." Hezbollah thrived because it adhered to Imam Khomeini's path, the path of resistance, construction, and never compromise. Said Hassan Nasrallah's martyrdom is not an epilogue, it is a prologue. As Zabur al-Muqawamah notes in his book, "The blood of the righteous does not vanish. It courses through history's veins, breathing life into the struggle." The axis of resistance is no mere alliance, but a hurricane, uprooting collaborators and cowards from Lebanon to Iraq to Yemen. Said Hassan Nasrallah's shadow looms. Ayatollah Khamenei reminded us that the road to liberation is paved with martyrs. Said Hassan Nasrallah's blood now fuels a new generation. Hamas in Gaza hurling Molotov, fighters in Syria reclaiming villages, and students in Tehran chanting "Death to America." His life screamed one truth: resistance is eternal. His legacy is not stone memorials, but rage that burns in every child who throws a stone, every mother who defies checkpoints, every fighter who chants "death to Israel." The great revolution that Imam Khomeini, God bless his soul, started, Ayatollah Sayed Ali Khamenei continued, and Sayed Hassan Nasrallah armed, cannot be stopped. As Zionism trembles and empires decay, his voice thunders across time. The spider's web collapses, the dawn rises. The martyrs are watching, the fight goes on, and Sayed Hassan Nasrallah's flame will never die. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir, And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
large crowd in southern Lebanon bid final farewell to the late leader of Hezbollah's executive council months after he was assassinated by Israel in a Beirut suburb. Israeli army launches more incursions into the northern West Bank as the regime continues its military operations against Palestinians in the occupied territory. And the EU foreign policy chief says any peace deal between Washington and Moscow over the war in Ukraine will not be valid without Kiev or Brussels' consent. Welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us to Lebanon, where people there have held a massive funeral and burial ceremony for the late Hezbollah leader Sayed Hashim Safieddine. Well, mourners gathered in the village of Deir Banun al-Nahar in southern Lebanon to pay their respect to Safieddine. They carried the coffin of the martyred Hezbollah leader to his final resting place. A representative from the leader of the Islamic Revolution also delivered a speech at the burial ceremony of Safieddine, vowing that Iranians continue to stand by the Lebanese people. Mr. Safieddine was assassinated in an Israeli airstrike in October of last year, just weeks after Hezbollah leader Sayed Hassan Nasrallah was killed in a similar air raid in southern Beirut. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps says the burial of martyred leaders of resistance movement in Lebanon is a testament to the fact that Hezbollah is alive and the resistance is going on among the free people of the world. In a statement, the IRGC said the funeral of the martyrs Sayed Hassan Nasrallah and Sayed Hashim Safieddine was a manifestation of Islam's power, national unity of Lebanon, and the continuation of the resistance against the Israeli regime. Well, the statement added that the martyrdom of these prominent figures will show the path ahead for millions who attended the ceremony and want to liberate Palestine and Al-Quds. The IRGC warned Israel that it will be trampled underfoot of the followers of the resistance and will be removed from the face of the West Asia region. Well, as Lebanon was holding funeral processions for Sayed Hassan Nasrallah and Sayed Hashim Safieddine, the pro-Palestine community in New York gathered to honor the two resistance leaders with heavy hearts. Rachel Hamdoun brings us more on this story.
Labbaika ya Nasrallah, or we are at your service, Sayed Nasrallah, were the slogans that echoed in the skies of Beirut and then later in New York City. Hezbollah chief Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, under whose leadership generations were raised, was honored alongside martyr Sayed Hashim Safieddine in a historic funeral in Lebanon attended by over 1 million people, as both were killed by Israel during the war on Lebanon as they fought for the liberation of Palestine. As the Lebanese held the funerals of their resistance icons on February 23rd, thousands of miles away, the people in New York gathered to participate to honor the martyrs at a vigil in Washington Square Park. There, physical and verbal threats by the Bitar Zionist organization failed to deter the unwavering loyalty to the resistance leaders.
We're gathered here to pay tribute and respect to a man who could not be tempted by any worldly pleasure and who gave his life for the Palestinian people.
Here, I think it's the beginning to something
beautiful, to recognizing someone who fought for justice until his dying breath.
In one particularly beautiful instance, the image of martyr Safieddine was covered momentarily by the Palestinian flag before reappearing as a picture of Palestinian martyrs Yahya Sinwar and Ismail Haniyeh, proving once again